Here, if you want to turn your Bibles to Proverbs 21:20, we'll camp out there for a little bit, and then we'll be in the book of Daniel also. So if you want to take a look at, so be prepared to go there. So as you can see, and family fellowship night, and we are going to be discussing, and I'm having to be able to give the devotion on Proverbs 21:20. This is when I first looked at this verse, I was kind of, interesting. And then after I've studied it, I have come away from a totally different point of view. I'm very encouraged about the sovereignty of God through this verse in more ways than one. So I'm here tonight speaking. For those who don't know me, my name is Ross Johnson. Along with some other people, we have the privilege and honor to take our turns up here on a monthly basis and give the devotion. Okay, Proverbs 21:20. The king's heart is in the hand of the Lord. Like the rivers of water, he turns it whatever way he wishes. The king's heart is in the hand of the Lord, like the rivers of water, he turns it whatever he wishes. So the context of this verse is, and as a way of review, a proverb is a short, popular saying that communicates a familiar truth or an observation. This this particular proverb is found in the section that's attributed to Solomon, and it's a series of proverbs in practical matters. And when it comes to the fact that there's rulers and kings in our world, that's a very practical matter. So let's define some of the words we find here. The first word I want to define is king. And it literally means ruler. The government head of a kingdom. Now, I added the word or nation to modernize this, but it literally means a ruler or the government head. So we have a ruler of any nation or government. The next word is heart. This is the Hebrew word that means the inner self or mind, or a person's will. And as for tonight's study, when I say the word heart, I mean the person's mind. In this case, the king's mind. The next word is hand. And this is going to mean the power, force, and ability to accomplish a task. Technically, it means the part of the human body from the wrist to the tip of the finger. So it literally means your hand. But it also can mean power or being what is owned or controlled by another. The force and the ability sufficient to accomplish a task as an extension of the hand as a body part which is essential to manipulate one's environment. It can mean control also. So we have a ruler, we have his mind, and we have a power or a force or an ability to accomplish a task. Now, this word river is the Hebrew word peleg, and it's spelled P-E-L-E-G, and it means channel or stream of water used to cultivate plants. This is kind of an eye-opener for me. So as I'm thinking like a northern Minnesotan, when I'm thinking a river, I'm thinking the Mississippi, which I cross every day five times at work. Or even a small river, like the smaller river like the St. Louis or the Minnesota River. But we're thinking, when I think, when you say the word river, that's what I'm thinking of, is the Mississippi, the St. Louis River. But in this word that's translated river in this verse means a channel or a stream of water used to cultivate plants. Therefore, and with the idea of bringing prosperity. Now, this is the same word that we find in Psalms 1:3. And he shall be like a tree planted by the rivers of water. So therefore, we think channel or stream of water to use to cultivate plants, that kind of gives a little different picture in my mind of what Psalms 1:3 is talking about and what Psalms 21:1 says. Now, just to have a contrast, Psalms 46:4 states, there is a river, and this is the Hebrew word nahar, N-A-H-A-R, whose streams, Peleg, shall make glad the city of God, the holy place of the tabernacle of the Most High. Now this nahar, or nahar, is a flow of body water used to refer to a major river. It is in the Na'a. This word is used to refer to the Nile and the Euphrates in Genesis 15:18, and it is also used to refer to the Tigris in Daniel 10:4. It says the great river, that is the Tigris. Yeah, in Daniel 10:4, now on the 24th day of the first month, I was by the side of the great river, that is the Tigris. Genesis 15:18 says, this is God talking, the Lord talking to Abram. He says, on the same day, the Lord made a covenant with Abram, saying, to your descendants, I've given you this land from the river of Egypt to the great river, the river Euphrates. So as you can see, the word that we're going to be looking at tonight is a stream or a channel. This is a picture of the Euphrates River. So this is one of the river, the great river Euphrates. Now if you can see in the background the little red dot over there, that's a person standing next to that palm tree. So to me, this is an average-sized river in northern Minnesota. Right, now I'm pretty sure I was looking up pictures of the Euphrates and the Tigris, and there's sections of it that are huge, but this just kind of, so when we think of a river, when we think of this word river here, this is what I was picturing, but this is what the word really means. A small channel of water. It reorientated me to think about how the Lord, like a river, changes or turns the minds of rulers. See, when I look at this picture, what I see is a lot of planning. I don't see a riverbed or the lowest spot full of water. This is planned. These channels are planned. The crops are planted. And there's a plan that goes into it. Where does the channel need to be? What is the purpose of this channel? What is it? What is it watering? What is the best way to get it done correctly? What kind of crops are being planted? This is all thought out beforehand when you think of a channel or a stream or an irrigation ditch. It just reminded me that our Lord is sovereign and all-knowing. And so when you plan something like this, all these details were hammered out and figured out to the finest detail in eternity past. So that really kind of jumped off the page for me. So I just hopefully that makes sense to you as it did to me. Okay, the next word we're going to look at is turns. This word means to cause to bend, to win over, or to extend. And finally, the last word, wishes, means desire or wants. So let's take a look at some examples. The first example I want to look at is the Pharaoh of the Exodus generation. Exodus 5:2 says, this is a negative example of the Lord turning the mind of the ruler, in this case the Pharaoh of Egypt, in order to get the nation of Egypt to be willing to let the Israelites leave. There was a couple things accomplished here. And ultimately, Pharaoh knew, and all the Egyptians knew who the Lord was at the end of this of the 10 plagues, and then the Israelites knew who the Lord was. So Moses and Aaron go to Pharaoh and say, let the Israelites go to the desert to worship the Lord. And the Pharaoh said, who is the Lord that I should obey his voice and let Israel go? I do not know the Lord, nor will I let Israel go. Chapter 7, verse 3 and 5. This is the Lord talking to Moses. I will harden Pharaoh's heart and multiply my signs and wonders in the land of Egypt, but Pharaoh will not heed you, so that I may lay my hand on Egypt and bring my armies and my people, the children of Israel, out of the land of Egypt by great judgments. The result, and the Egyptians shall know that I am the Lord, when I stretch out my hand on Egypt and bring the children of Israel out from among them. So we have the 10 plagues, and finally the last plague hits, and the Pharaoh, this very same Pharaoh, as we said, who's the Lord, why should I care, says, he called Moses and Aaron by night and says, rise, go out from among my people, both you and the children of Israel, and go and serve the Lord as you have said. Notice the extreme differences in tone. I get a general idea that the Pharaoh here knows exactly who the Lord is, along with the entire nation of Egypt. And and the children of Israel. In fact, we know 40 years later, when Joshua goes in to take Jericho, he sends in two spies, and this is what Rahab the spy says. Oops, sorry. Now this is, again, this is 40 years later. She said to them on the roof, and she said to the men, I know the Lord has given you the land, that the terror of you has fallen on us, that all of the inhabitants of the land are faint-hearted because of you. And why is this? For we have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea for you when you came out of Egypt, and what you did to the two kings of the Amorites who were on the other side of the Jordan, who you utterly destroyed. And as soon as we have heard these things, our hearts melted. Neither did there remain any courage in anyone because of you, for the Lord our God, For the Lord your God, he is God in heaven above and earth beneath. So, 40 years after this night, a resident of the Canaan land knows exactly who the Lord is. So let's, if you're not in Daniel, we'll take a look at King Nebuchadnezzar for an example. Daniel chapter 4. I'll be highlighting some verses in 25 through 37. In this part of the book of Daniel, Nebuchadnezzar is warned by Daniel that he has a big head. And if he doesn't take care of it, he's going to have some bad things happen to him. Daniel 4:25. This king was warned, and this is Daniel in verse 25, warning the king because of a dream that he had. And Daniel says, they shall drive you from men, your dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field, and they shall make you eat grass like oxen. They shall wet you with the dew of heaven, and seven times shall pass over you, till you know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men, and gives to whomever it chooses. And insomuch as they gave the command to leave the stump and the root of the tree, your kingdom will be assured to you after you come to know what heaven rules. Therefore, O king, let me advise you, my advice be acceptable to you. Break off your sins by being righteous and your iniquities by showing mercy to the poor. Perhaps there will be a lengthening of your prosperity. Nebuchadnezzar did not listen. Verse 28. A year later, all this came upon King Nebuchadnezzar. At the end of 12 months, he is walking in the royal palace. The king spoke, saying, "Is this not great Babylon that I have built for a royal dwelling in my mighty power and in the honor of my majesty?" While the words were still in the king's mouth, a voice fell from heaven. "King Nebuchadnezzar, as it is to you spoken, the kingdom has departed from you." Verse 33, that very hour the word was filled concerning Nebuchadnezzar. He was driven from men and ate grass like an oxen. His body was wet with the dew of heaven, till his hair had grown like eagle's feathers and his nails like bird claws. So, here we go. We have a proud, mighty king. We already know that he's one of the strongest kings. He was even told within dreams that Daniel himself said, "This is you. You're the head of gold. You are the most powerful king in the world." So now we hear from Nebuchadnezzar. Verse 34, at the end of the time, I, Nebuchadnezzar, lifted my eyes to heaven, and my understanding returned to me, and I blessed the Most High and praised and honored him who lives forever. For his dominion is an everlasting dominion, and his kingdom is from generation to generation. All the inhabitants of the earth are reputed as nothing. He does according to his will in the army of heaven and among the inhabitants of the earth. No one can restrain his hand or say to him, "What have you done?" At the same time, my reason returned to me, and the glory of my kingdom, my honor and splendor returned to me. My counselors and nobles resorted to me. I was restored to my kingdom, and excellent majesty was added to me. Verse 37. And now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and extol and honor the King of heaven, all whose works are truth, his ways justice, and those who walk in pride he will be able to put down. So we can see that King Nebuchadnezzar's mind was turned. And I often thought, well, why is we're looking at rulers here? What's so great about the rulers, you know? And as Nebuchadnezzar and as Pharaoh pointed out, is if their minds turn, they have lots of influence. And as the Lord turns their minds, they influence the countries or the rulers that they're ruling over and possibly nations around the world because of what they're doing. And as I thought about this, I wondered if there was other rulers that are like channels of water that the Lord will turn with his hand. And what about the governor of a state that we live in, or the CEO, or the boss you have interactions with? And to this example, I'm one slide behind. Sorry about that. And for this, I thought of Joseph. Joseph, as you know, was sold into slavery down in Egypt. He was picked up off the auction block by Potiphar, who was an officer of Pharaoh, the captain of the guard. And Genesis 39, verse 3 says, "And his master saw that the Lord was with him. The Lord made all that he did prosper in his hand. So Joseph found favor in his sight and served him. Then he made him overseer of his house and all that he and put all that he had under authority." So Joseph, the Lord is with him. Everything he does gets done really well and prospers. Then Joseph then gets thrown in jail. In verse 21 of Genesis 39, "But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him mercy. And he, the Lord, gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison." So I don't know how much time passed, but the fact is the Lord gave the keeper of the prison favor. So The Lord gave Joseph favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. So we can see by this example that the Lord doesn't just stop at the heads of nations, but has turned the mind of the authorities that Joseph had in his life. I'm very encouraged by the fact that Joseph and his example, and how the Lord turned the minds of the rulers in his life long before he stood before the Pharaoh. The fact is the ruler of this nation, the president or a king of any nation, us interacting with them is pretty slim. But what about the other rulers in your life? Do you understand that the Lord can turn their minds also? Your boss, the CEO of the company, other people that have delegated authority over you. So a couple other translations, which I really liked as I did this study. The NLT says, "The king's heart is like a stream of water directed by the Lord. He guides it wherever he pleases." The New American Standard, "The king's heart is like channels of water in the hand of the Lord. He turns it wherever he pleases." As I meditate on this verse, it came up to me, why would the Lord turn the minds of the ruler the way he does? Now, it goes without saying, the ruler of any given country, as I said earlier, has a lot of influence over a nation and the surrounding area. We can see this in our lives every day, today, and we can see it throughout history. Through the three examples I saw, two of them in the Pharaoh and King Nebuchadnezzar as heads of nations, but we also saw that Joseph had rulers that were turned by the Lord in his life. Occurred to me that when the Lord turns the mind of a ruler, the entire nation or the entire kingdom is influenced and affected and knows about it. We can appreciate the character of God, and a couple of his attributes stood out for me in this one is his sovereignty and his omniscience and his love for all peoples. He's doing the same thing today. We may not understand what he's doing right now and why he's doing it, but we know that he's doing it, and we can rest assured that he is in control. He turns the mind of the rulers to do his will, at the same time influences people of the nations of the world today. We can look past the headlines of the nightly news and know that the story about what the president did or what a ruler did or a dictator did or did not do that day, week, or month is because ultimately the Lord is in control. And all things are going according to his plan. The Lord was there at the beginning of history, and he will be there at the end of history. And we can take comfort in the fact he turns the minds of the rulers of this world as part of his overall plan. The king's heart is in the hand of the Lord. Like the rivers of water, he turns it wherever he wishes. And that is all I have.